red. Yep, that's me.
You're welcome, everyone, for the the sheer volume.
As they're driving down the road, listening to our podcast, they're looking around for red. They're like, what is...
Yep.
He's in the red.
I am in the red.
Am I supposed to see red right now?
I'm in the red.
Is this Red Dawn?
Anyone, if you saw red just now when I did that...
go ahead and write Brad's fault. Tell me I'm a horrible person.
Yeah.
It is Brad's fault.
Let Brad know that you're listening. I think that'll make him feel
good
anyway.
That actually will make me feel good. Please tell me you're
listening. Hey, guys. A lot of things have happened since the last time we hung out.
It's true.
In this world, it's just continuing to spin, even if we're not putting out episodes every 3 days. Like, things are happening so quickly, it almost feels like we should do check-ins just to make sure we're all right. So, James, are you all right? You doing okay over there?
My neck kind of hurts.
Aw, sorry to hear that.
Sorry, I guess I made the mistake of genuinely answering your question.
No, I appreciate it, man. I feel so much closer to you. And actually, our listeners feel very close to you right now because they're like, God, I wish you didn't
Sorry,
have
I didn't
neck
go
pain.
Existential. I have a bit of a neck pain.
Oh, man.
We're getting real on this.
Yeah, I drove a lot for my job the last couple of days. I'm feeling you on the just feeling a little stiff. I don't have serious neck pain right now.
Yeah, it's worth bringing
like
up.
Chiropractor, but
especially when the specific question is, how are you doing? I don't feel like I just gave a question that was
gave an answer.
Unbalanced.
No, it was very balanced, and I feel comfortable with your response. It just it caught me off guard, man. I wasn't ready for you to actually answer the question. I thought you were just going to give you the like classic American response of like, hey, it's all right, things are good. Or
do you need to ask me again?
Things are terrible. Or actually, I'm tempted to start working on
Should
your
do a
neck
take two?
as we're recording, see if I can like work some of that.
Yeah, we need to add more touching into this this podcast.
James and I are in the same room. Brad just gets to watch us touch each other as I try to fix his neck, but
it's glorious. It's what everybody should get to see. That's for sure.
I know. I'm ready to screenshot
touching
our Google Hangout right now, so we can capture the moment, so we don't forget.
Screenshot. Words are hard.
I'm the one that usually struggles with words. What's going on?
I don't know
with
what's
you?
Happening. I don't know if you've heard, but my neck kind of hurts.
I just made a note. I just notated that. So I will take this moment to, since the last time we talked, my band, The Squid and the Whale, got to play for the Best of the Pine Belt. So we played on this live. We played at the Sanger in Hattiesburg in front of hundreds of people. And our keyboard player actually wrote parts for the string quartet that played with us during the song. Guys, the video is on Squid and the Whale's Facebook page, and it's pretty freaking awesome. It was probably my proudest moment with being with the band, having a string quartet, and realizing, one, that these four people, these college students that are in the Southern Miss Orchestra, got the music probably 2 weeks in advance. They only played with us for a sound check twice and then played it live and just killed it. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is something else, man. It was really cool. So to our listeners, check it out, man. The sound quality is not the best, but it's a really cool video, and you'll catch really the feeling of the song and having a string quartet. So
it is disappointing that there's not a good audio recording of it.
Yeah. Well, we are going to record the song with the string quartet. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I can't tell you exactly when that's going to happen. We've been talking about it for a while, but it will happen eventually. And
right.
So we'll get a good recording of it. But it was pretty magical live, I'll tell you that.
Well, I was telling James before we started recording, I have officially been kicked out of my recording spot.
I did notice that your background changed a little
bit.
Did. It looks like you're in a some sort of storage room that just has a lot of random stuff in
it. Well, I'm in our guest room.
Okay.
And I am actually my.
So I just hated on your guest room for all of our listeners to hear.
You just completely bashed it.
You're like, dude, you have so
wherever
many
you are, you should just burn it. That is horrible. Right.
Like, I'm actually.
Is that your Brad? Are you in your storage unit?
Well, what's funny is my desk that I have everything on is actually in the closet. I'm actually looking into the back of a closet. Okay. So this is now my recording spot, which is cool. It took a little bit to get used to, but I like it.
So it's almost like you're right on the edge of Narnia, and like mid-recording, you may see something. Like have this reaction where it'd be like, oh my gosh, dude, he's going through his closet and he just saw Aslan.
Yes. Yes.
So I like that you said it took a little bit to get used to. Unless you've been recording on your own, this is your first experience with it. So,
well, but yeah.
Are you saying you've just felt really awkward so far?
Yeah, it feels a little awkward to be staring at a wall.
To be that close.
Yeah.
Do you have like coats and shirts above your head right now? Because that would be
they're
really
to my right over here.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I feel like I could commit to David and I finding a tandem bike and doing double denim of short cut off jean shorts, you know, frayed at the bottom where the pockets are hanging out.
Lots of thigh. Give me that thigh.
And then you know, button down denim shirts that, you know, we only need two buttons. And us riding a tandem bike and just having buddy pictures taken that you can have blown up and then put as the back of that closet,
right?
If that will make you feel better.
It would, and it would also make me feel better that when we have guests come over and they, for whatever reason, if they ever open the closet, there's just going to be a picture of the two of you.
That would be amazing.
Right.
If my memory serves me right, when... on your wedding weekend, James, myself, and Adam may have done a photo shoot. Was it in that room? Did we do a photo shoot in that room?
No, it was in their bedroom.
It was in their bedroom. Okay.
It was it was in multiple rooms. And
yeah, things got weird. There was, we dressed up. Some, there were wardrobe
there's
changes.
There's some armor that's actually off to my back right that, David, I think you were wearing. Only that, if I recall. And
yeah, there's several things in y'all's bedroom that I hope you watched.
don't tell me what it is.
I know Adam's naked butt was on several things.
Well, now our listeners know why I thought he was in a storage unit, since there's armor in the guest room.
Yeah.
Which is a little random. Yeah. It's a little random. I'm like, hey, I mean, people are ready for, if you guys get attacked, I guess, like you can
Brad is always, always prepared for a melee.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I'm
there's been
I'm
too ready. Many random times that he's been attacked, like going to the grocery store and somebody's like, melee.
We only see it because it's when he's kind of winding down for the day. He normally just wears that underneath his clothes at all times.
You
That's
suit
why
up
he always looks like
work,
he's got a six pack and rock hard muscles.
It would make me look like I've got an eight pack and some pretty good pecs going on.
I am picturing like Roman like armor that you would see in like the old.
Essentially, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Without
that
the metal
you would
straps.
See in the like the old like Bible plays at church.
Here's the question though, that everyone has the question for any breastplate like that. Does it have nipples on it?
I hope it does.
It does not.
Oh.
That's okay.
We need to get a BB gun and make that happen.
Do you shoot the inside?
Yeah.
Make the metal plate.
Oh, I was
plate?
Like, what are you going to give it an innie? What's happening here? Yeah.
It's got two sides, Brad. Come on.
Okay. All right.
I followed. That's just how old James and I's friendship is that I followed. I was like,
when I vaguely
out,
say how to give a breastplate nipples, you're like, yeah, I know what you're going
over
with that.
Just flip it over and just give it. Got two right there.
Right.
Two nipples.
Right. So for anybody who has never heard this story, these particular pictures were taken after I had left to go to our wedding.
He left us alone in his house. I take no responsibility.
Right. Y'all hadn't left yet, and so apparently y'all had your photo shoot. Well, so then Megan and I go off on our honeymoon for a week. We come back. I get back on the computer for whatever reason, and the first thing that pops up are these pictures, and it's just scrolling through these pictures.
We set it as the screensaver to make sure it would scroll through, and the background, I'm pretty sure, was one that just looked like a butt.
Dude, I mean, let's think about how confusing this was for Brad, though, right? So, like, Brad goes on his honeymoon. Some would argue that the sparks are flying. Like, it's such a magical,
romantic trip. Some would argue? Who's arguing with me?
Right?
I mean,
yeah. Who's fighting against this?
No one's fighting. No one's fighting against this.
I mean, it was all right. I mean, I wouldn't say their honeymoon was great.
I'm sure at least one of our listeners had a honeymoon where they're like, that was okay. It could have been better. So Brad gets back, right? He's got
this
all
is the color of red
feelings.
That I love Brad to be.
Yeah, he's got all these feelings, right? Like his loins are on lock. You know, he's got this special connection.
I love any story that has the word
with
loins
his wife. He flips his computer open, right, to get things going. He knows that, like, hey, I need to give Megan just some breathing room. Sees a picture of a man's ass, right, and just a lot of conflicting emotions hit Brad. He's like, I shouldn't be attracted to this. I think it has to do with the trip I was just on. Quickly changes the picture.
To another one. Never
to
ending
again.
Pictures.
To a picture of three men, all of which yeah. not wearing anything,
not wearing a lot of clothes, covering themselves
with random objects of our house.
Various objects that you own, just covering the naughty bits, as Monty Python would call them.
So this is Everything Is Okay. I'm really glad you're here. This is a really good intro story. For our listeners, we're a very serious podcast, as you can tell. We're the intersection of faith, questions, and stories about loins. So there
that's
you
a,
go.
That's a fair description.
Yeah, that's it. Just three guys from Oklahoma telling stories, talking about just conflicting, uncomfortable feelings that happen post honeymoon. So,
this episode is brought to you by Nippled Armor and
Nippled Armor. We do it so you don't have to use a BB gun.
Yeah. Nippled Armor. Always look cold.
Oh
man. Gosh, I'd love to have that six pack though.
Right?
I would love to have that six pack. Yeah.
Do you have a framed picture of James Bond over there?
I do. Yeah. We also...
Once again, this is the coolest storage unit I've ever seen.
Which,
I'm
have,
really
okay,
glad
we have
that
one
we're
of
a part
James
of this.
Bond in here. We have one of James Dean in the other one, and Marilyn Monroe. This was all here before I existed in this house. We also have one of the Rat Pack back here.
I guess what we need to ask now is, did you add anything to this house?
I added three things.
A podcast studio in a closet.
That came later.
A bunch of framed pictures that we took for you.
When I first moved in, I contributed three things to the house. My clothes, a TV, and a dog. And that's it. That's all I contributed to this house.
Well, it's a standing offer for us to take that picture for you to put in the entire back of the guest's closet. And y'all's closet as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. We wouldn't see it in our closet.
We can do another one for y'all to just put over the entirety of above your bed.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Just for motivation.
Be able to enjoy that.
Yeah. I just pictured George Costanza where he's in his boxers, doing that like iconic photo shoot on the couch. God, he looked so good. That's going to be us, man. Just you and me.
That was one of the pictures that was on my computer. Of you.
Really?
Yes, in your boxers.
What?
You doing the George Costanza.
Was I doing the George Costanza?
I am realizing that there is a chance that we won't be able to find a tandem bicycle.
I was about to say my neighbor has one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, if not, I know that I think the McNairs might have one that has the child seat on the back.
Oh, sweet. I'll fit in that. That's perfect. I'm not a very big person.
Sit in the child seat and the other one ride the bike. That might even make a better picture.
Yeah, this is going to be something special. This will be special. We need to take Brad's storage unit to the next level. And I think with our powers combined, we can make that a reality.
Oh, man.
Brad's like, for the last time, it's our guest room. Why are you so mean?
It's a guest room that you've stayed in.
Yeah. I have.
But apparently you don't remember. It wasn't memorable. We need to jazz it up.
No, it was. Dude, it has armor. It was extremely memorable.
Armor, James Bond.
Yeah, absolutely. James Dean, Marilyn Monroe. when you turn out the light and you're not in the room, you don't know what those pictures are doing together. But it's a really special place. It's a very special place. So.
It's special for sure.
All right, so we should get into the topic.
We should.
I mean, that's what you'd think.
Let's do it. Transition.
James, this was your topic. This was something you presented to the group.
So the responsibility
is
on your shoulders.
This is Brad shirking responsibility.
See, you know when people assume where a sentence is going and it's just not going that way. What I was going to say was, well, now you got me confused. Oh, what I was going to say was that
we lost him, James.
Give me a second so I can make up a second half of my sentence.
Was that I wanted you to give a quick summary on why you wanted to do this topic before we got going.
Before you jump into the summary, do you think that the three of us could jump into maybe a rental van and drive it down to, I don't know, a third world country and just volunteer for a week and make a difference?
I was with you for the first half of that sentence. Just us in a rental van.
All right, let's just scrap the volunteering and we'll just go on a road trip. Okay, cool. That was your transition in today's topic. I thought it,
wow,
I just
amazing.
Made that up, man. It just came. It came. It's here. Go ahead and be quiet so Brad can cut it and go.
And that was enough break to cut it. So, so as we were talking about it a little bit before, what kind of my thought was from various things I've interacted with and watched and conversations I've had lately, the idea of basically, you know how people come back from a mission trip or anything of that sort, anytime they go to try to help people that they view as more impoverished or needy in some way than they are, they come back and they say something to the effect of, I just feel like I got more than I gave. I guess the summary of the topic today is, you're right. You did.
I guess I got more than I gave. That is that's a classic youth group line.
It is.
It's a good one.
It's not just a youth group line. I mean, that's a line that gets used
all over
a lot. And I believe that they mean that, of course. I mean, I think that that's a genuine statement. But I think what we're trying to ask is, why is that? Or at least that's what I'm wanting to explore is, you know, what is the reason behind it seeming to always be more that you receive when you go to these places that you're supposedly there to help or minister to or all of that? So that's the part that I think got really intriguing to me.
And before we move forward too, I'm going to throw out there, I don't think that it's just nefarious to go and volunteer in another country or to go on a mission trip for a short period. And I think when we're talking about this, we're really talking about short-term trips, not long-term volunteers. Right. But before you're like putting your guard up because you've been on 15 mission trips, and we know you have because we have also
been on
quite a few.
We have been on a few,
Yeah, we're not completely hating on the practice. We're just asking, I think, some tough questions because there's been evidence that's been presented to us that's shown us that it's may do more harm than good. So that's my caveat on the front.
Yeah. They're going to enter this with a lot of hedging. I am not. So there's that. So
James is
going to
be
fine.
Hateful.
Which is totally fine. The opinions presented on this podcast are not necessarily the opinions of all the people on the podcast. So, the short-term trips that tend to happen, are normally pretty expensive. Like if you're going to another country, and so often when you go to another country, it's typically for, has to meet the quota of certain things that are the negative things there. So you can feel like, I live in such a different position than this that I can somehow be beneficial. And then going in and doing like a VBS or, building an orphanage or building whatever that might be built, And I just wonder how often the approach to going to a place is what are their needs? What can actually get them to the next stage that they want to go to, instead of what is the quick, easy thing that we can feel like we made a difference? Because that's the main thing, is you want to leave feeling like you did something to make things better. And I don't feel like we often do. Because think about in your own life. There's very few people who I feel like would say, there was just a moment in my life that was pivotal for both me and my parents and just our whole family. Because these people showed up that I had never seen before. And I did a VBS, and then I never saw them again. And it was just, it was life-changing. I don't know of anybody who's ever had that experience. And while there can be benefits to that sort of thing, if you're partnering with people who are doing long-term relationships with people in a given area, then yes, you can go and participate in and build on the relationship that these other people are building. But to go into an area and just feel like we can go in and make any sort of difference over a week is just pretty conceited, really.
Yeah. The thing I was trying to put my thumb on was, like, I was thinking about different volunteers that have come in to different areas of my life in the past. I was thinking about the tornadoes we've had in Hattiesburg. So there were two tornadoes that we've had in the last, 4 years? Not this past one, but the one before that. There were hundreds of volunteers that came and worked and gave basically short and long-term relief to these neighborhoods, got out there, got their hands dirty, and tried to help the families that were coming back to these houses find anything that they could still salvage, that sort of thing. And that sort of work had a really positive impact on the city. So that would be one example where I'm thinking of, like, short-term folks that came in that were coordinated that could go in it and make a difference and then leave and help those folks for the time that they were there. But I like the point that you were making of there needing to be some sort of longevity with the work that's being done, right? So, like, if the volunteers are coming in to take care of an issue, there needs to be some sort of long-term process or system of people to help these folks, like, if they need to get another house, you know, or to get them past the initial issues that have come up. And I guess it would be problematic if you just had a random group of 10 people show up and say, hey, put us to work, you know, and I guess that could do possibly more harm than good. I don't know. That's just
with some of that as well. I'll add on the idea that so often when people do that, and yes, there are some benefits to people coming in and helping initial cleanup and that sort of thing, but there's a very limited number of people who care still when that issue is not in their face. Like, while it was in the news, while there was stuff being addressed of, like, these horrible things happened, right, people were there. Yes, they helped clean some stuff up. But was that a way of building relationships or just doing just the simple thing? Which I understand that for things like hurricane cleanup, tornado cleanup, yes, there does need to be some aspect of people coming in and doing some initial help. But part of what I would say is that needs to not check the box of helping for you if you're not going to have relationships with people where you're from that are long-term things. Because I feel like a lot of the people who feel the drive and urge to go and help are people of faith. And if you're going through that viewpoint, too often we use mission trips or disaster relief to check the box of helping the orphan, the widow, the prisoner, all of those sort of things, and then go back to our normal lives and don't actually have real relationship with those type people, you know, those types. or people who are hurting in any way, because that's difficult. It's hard to have the daily thing. It's hard to to really give of yourself consistently to people. And so, yes, there was a lot of people who showed up and did a lot of initial help that was nice for the people around here. But there are so many houses that are still really messed up. But it's not in the forefront of anybody's mind. So you just do it until you don't have to think about it much anymore. And then, you know, we were able to hear about more of some of the stuff that's still going on, because there are some Mennonite groups here who they're still rebuilding houses from those tornadoes.
Right, have made it more of a long-term thing for sure.
Yeah, they've been working for years trying to rebuild houses and help people out and building relationships in these various areas. And I feel like that is real help. So I'm not saying that there's never any positives that come from these things. But it's the question of, like, is this more about us, or is it about the people we are trying to help? And are we really helping?
Right. So for me, trying to wrap my head around this, or for, let's say, that different leaders out there that are listening and thinking about stuff that they've done with their church groups or with their volunteer groups, it's looking at motives, both personal and as an organization. What are your motives? And then what are your objectives,
right,
as you're going into that, and trying to be very intentional with that to make sure that you're not only helping the people that need to be helped, but also supporting your volunteers and not doing more harm than good.
So here's a couple of the different things that I've been listening to and reading about over the last day or so. There was I heard some of the numbers from Hurricane Katrina, that over the few years after Hurricane Katrina, of people going and helping through the Red Cross or all of those organizations,
right,
at least the secular ones that put the numbers out, there was a certain number of volunteers that they had come through, and they valued the work that was done by each volunteer at about $18 an hour, and then did the average number of hours that they worked and all of that. And with all of these major organizations, they came to the idea that there was approximately 263, I think it was, million dollars worth of help that was given to people in, like, Ninth Ward and all of those areas and that were affected by Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And that's awesome. But then they looked at the numbers of how much it cost to, with travel, housing, food, all of that for these volunteers, they spent more than $1.1 billion. So that's a pretty huge deficit in the amount they spent versus any positive that they had. And so instead, they could hire actual crews of people. Like, don't come, just hire actual crews of people. And they could have built, like, more than 10,500 $100,000 houses. So they could have built five times the amount of houses that were destroyed, like really nice houses, for the amount of money that they put into having people go and be able to say, yep, I helped with Hurricane Katrina, and then, you know, spend all this time doing the tourism stuff all throughout, eating beignets and all that kind of stuff, which is what a lot of time is also spent doing.
Which that's not a bad thing.
You get to go to these places and then
helps the local economy.
Other things and
buy the beignets
and whatever.
All of the beignets.
But it's essentially like a vacation that you then, you know, work for maybe half the time while spending your time vacationing in a certain area. There was another girl who had done a trip to try to help kids in China, and when she was saying that they were teaching them the alphabet and various things like that, and she felt like they were picking up on the alphabet really, really quickly, and she was just so impressed that she was telling them, you know, this is amazing. And they said, well, you're the seventh group that's come through to teach us our ABCs.
Oh, man.
Like, it's that kind of thing. Like, we do repeat things because, especially with a lot of the bigger organizations, that's their income, is making sure people have stuff to come do. And so they have these set trips that you go, and they know how to make people feel like they did really helpful, good things. And then you leave. And she, one of the things she said was, some of the kids asked her, "This is awesome. When are you going to come back?" She wasn't going to come back.
Right.
That's the thing. That's definitely something that I had noticed with all of the mission trips that I did when we would do VBSs in various places. That was a question that kids had. When are you coming back? And no one was going to come back.
Right.
Relationship is the only way to really make change for people. And when we do these sorts of trips, it's putting Band-Aids on things and then not building relationships.
And again, I mean, there are groups that have basically systematically connected some sort of, basically made a way for there to be longevity between either having groups go to the same villages and work on things over a period of time to continue to kind of create that, I don't know, to build that relationship that you're looking for, to help that group move forward or progress, whoever you're working with. But you're right, the majority of them, unfortunately, don't do that because they don't either have the financial means, or they haven't set up a system, or they don't have volunteers that can basically make this their life, right?
Right.
And so that's when I look at, like, Peace Corps, for example, or some of these mission groups that basically spend a long amount of time working in these communities, and then we'll have like another group take over from where they are. Like, that can be very effective.
Right.
Right.
So earlier when we were talking about this a little bit, Brad asked me, like, so what can help? Like, what is the thing to do that can actually be beneficial? And, the example that I have is what's been done here in Hattiesburg with one of the local schools. And they were adopted by a church here. And the church pays for a full-time employee to be in the school. And then there's volunteers that come and do things at the school, which a lot of churches have volunteers go and do random little things for schools and whatever. It's things that look a certain way. But with paying to have somebody there full time and have those relationships with all of the people, the students, teachers, everybody, and then having volunteers come and be able to lend to that relationship and not have to show up and have that be the relationship, there's been huge change at that school. Test numbers are incredible. Like, there's been dramatic change, and that's because there was time taken to invest in those people as a long-term thing, instead of it being, let's show up to a school every once in a while,
right?
Which a lot of places do. There's other schools in Hattiesburg who have churches show up about as often as this church has people show up, but without that one person there continuing a relationship, it's not the same. And so there's a lot of options if you're going to do like short-term mission trips through a church or whatever. If you find people who already have relationship built and go and build on that, and don't just show up to a random spot and then do something and leave.
Yeah. Play with the kids at the orphanage.
Right. I mean, and even, you know, even partnering with churches, a lot of the time it just still ends up being like, what are the photo op opportunities?
Were you about to say something, Brad? Because I just thought of something funny.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot to what you guys have been talking about. I mean, when it comes to disaster relief, I think there's something to be said about doing what you can. And, you know, there is an immediate need right away that presents itself. And I'll tell you, the organization that seems to be the best, at least around here, at immediate disaster relief is the local Baptist churches. Like, they get in there quick. They actually have disaster teams, like, that leave the night of or whatever. Like, when we had the Moore tornado here in 2013, like, they were here immediately. And we're here for a couple weeks. Now, you can say that, yeah, they weren't here the whole time, but they did what they could do. You know, they brought chainsaws. They got trees off of houses. They did that type of stuff before the insurance could come in. I was actually, you know, I was a part of that a little bit, actually. But I think where the question lies, and James, we kind of talked about this a little bit before we got going, but, you know, when I think back to I remember two mission trips that we went on in high school, one being to Boston, which I know all three of us went to, and the other one was to Lake Tahoe, I believe.
Yeah.
Both of which we did a VBS. The thing that keeps coming back to me, we made really good friends with the people in Boston, but the people that we made friends with were at the church, not the people we were there to serve. It was the people in the church, which is valuable too. But what I kind of noticed is we didn't ask the question, how can we come in and serve this community? What we did was, is we came with this is what we're going to do to be our ministry. And I feel like there's not a lot of questions asked as what is the actual need? How can we be most effective? What is the actual need that we can help serve? And it may be as simple as, you know, instead of asking, you know, here's what we're going to do, more asking, you know, how can we serve you? Or how can we best serve you, and what's going, you know, what's a need that you have? You know, I mean, I don't know, did the church in Boston have a need for a group of youth group to come, or another youth group to come up and just put on a VBS? I don't know, but I don't remember that question.
I
just think that that's the thing. I think where people start to get frustrated with groups is when it is this preset plan. We're going to come down, we're going to go to, I don't know, Nicaragua. We're going to spend a week. We're going to give them beans and rice for a week. We might build a school or something, which is great. And then we leave. But in a week or so, when that beans and rice goes out, they're standing there hungry, and we learned a lot from them as far as their happiness and their poverty and, you know, and all of these things that we learn. I mean, I think we could be better served of doing research and figuring out what are some needs we can take care of long term. I love the model of the school in Hattiesburg. I think that's fantastic. There's a similar model here with City Center in Oklahoma City, where it's not ran by a church, it's sponsored by churches. It's its own organization that, you know, takes care of kids that need meals after school. You know, they don't, their families are below the poverty line and they need help, you know. So I think for me, the question is motivation. And the question that gets asked, you know, we don't really ask how we can serve. We more tell people what we're going to do. And that seems more like colonization and less about serving. So
what you're saying is it's like somebody asking how you're doing and just having their set response they want you to give. And when you genuinely answer it, they just kind of look down on you. That's what you're saying it's like? Because I feel that pain.
Did that happen earlier? No, I think, Brad, I think you're onto something. I like the thought of a either having somebody that's there long term, that's a touch point, that's like built relationships in that community that can then take, filter people in and put them in places that they need to be in, right? Going with that church example with the program they have here, they've also partnered with the university, have gotten grants to have other basically tutors come in and work full time. That's awesome, you know? I've heard, we have a good friend named Mark Langham, who's, I think he was telling me about one of the things that frustrates him with the groups that come in and like will come try to build something or whatever, is that they have plenty of people there that are professionals that need work, that know how to build and have those skills, where possibly church groups could pay those folks to do that.
Right.
And so that would help them with their livelihood, help them take care of their families and actually give you a better product. You don't get the selfies, right? So this is what I thought of, and I don't know if y'all have seen this, but on Instagram there's a basically this parody person called Barbie Savior. Have y'all heard of this?
Mm-mm.
All right, so it's on Instagram. Whoever does this basically has these different Barbie characters, and I'll just read what it says under Barbie Savior. Jesus, adventures, Africa, two worlds, one love, babies, beauty, not qualified, called, 20 years young. It's not about me, but it kind of is.
wow.
And so this account has been up and running for a long, long time, but there's just different pictures of Barbie trying to do right, trying to be that missionary that we always want to be, taking selfies, drinking like the best coffee next to, you know, the poor African children. It's just it's ridiculous. But Barbie Savior, I think, really hits the nail on the head for what we're talking about in the sense of what's your motivation. Are you in a place that's going to help this long-term goal of either helping this community move forward? Have you done the legwork as a leader? If you're taking a group of, let's say, if you're taking youth to Nicaragua, have you done the legwork to know what their needs are, like Brad was talking about? Where can they get plugged in? And can this be more about the people there and less about us feeling good, you know?
Right. So part of my question would be, like, do you want certain people to be helped, or do you want to help them? Because those aren't necessarily the same thing. Whereas, you know, a selling point for going to certain villages in Africa or impoverished places in South America or whatever, where you can go and say things like, I mean, they don't have access to clean water. Cool. Well, don't go there then. Pay for people to make a well there.
Yeah. Pay like for
if like, that's the issue. That's
give money to
this,
like charity water or
right,
these different organizations
the place
that are
holding
already doing
it down and keeping them from really being able to thrive, then make that change for them. Like, don't have it to where, well, I mean, the real thing is I want to show up and do something. If that's the thing, then it's about you, not them. And so what really needs to happen is find out what they need. If they need somebody to show up and do something, which does tend to be the case for disaster relief, like, yeah, they need people to come and you know, put tarps on the roofs and pull trees out of houses and clean up debris and that kind of thing. I understand that. But that's not always what is needed.
And if it's about you, that's okay. Go on a vacation. You know,
right,
James. It's okay if it's about you. Like that's it's digging deep and getting to the root of what's going on inside of you. Of like, hey, do I want to go to this different country and experience this country because that would be incredible, or do I want to serve because I've see a need that needs to be taken care of? I mean, James sent Brad and I a video. This lady Samantha Nutt is her name, right? She was talking about how taking a vacation to a third world country is a good thing. You are helping their economy.
Right.
Like, go there, spend money, buy your, whatever you buy, your clay pots and different artwork and stuff like that, that's fine. You're helping somebody. You may be helping somebody put their kid, pay for their books for school for a year.
Right.
You know, it's that sort of thing that happens a little bit probably with these missionary groups that come. They do spend money in the economy, but it's okay to go there and vacation. Like, spend your money there. That does help them. If you have an issue with water shortages across the world, which that's a huge issue, there are organizations that do that day in, day out. They need our money. Like, you know, take a birthday and say, hey, don't give me gifts. Let's give money towards charity water, and I want to raise $10,000. You know, the organizations that do it right, part of what they bring to the table is a long-term strategy and transparency, right? So like with Charity Water, you can watch not only where your money's going, but you can see the lifetime of that well. You know, you can keep tabs on it. That's that transparency, not all nonprofits have had that and still don't, but that's something that is, I feel like that's the expectation now, and that's what we should expect from our organizations that are professionally doing this to help these groups.
And I would say if you, you know, if you're a youth minister or pastor or whatever, and are thinking about how you can do some sort of trip or whatever to, you know, impact your congregation or youth group or whatever, look in your town. I guarantee there's people below the poverty line and who are struggling with a lot of various things. Find out how you can help them. Like, then if you want to do other trips, that's fine, but that needs to be your focus.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you just hit on a big point, because, you know, we've talked about the mission trip, you know, the mission trips we went to in other states, which was cool and whatever, but then there was people in our hometown that needed our help. And yeah, we may have had a day where we cleaned somebody's yard, or where, you know, we may have helped a elderly person out every once in a while, but it wasn't an intentional thing. And it wasn't something that we sat there and looked at the needs of the people around us and helped take care of those needs, you know? And I think that's super important, and it's something we lack as a whole with the church in a lot of ways. So
I was thinking about were there some resources that you, James, stumbled across, or Brad, y'all stumbled across, that, I mean, we talked about the Samantha Nutt video, which was cool. I think that there's been some TED Talks on this whole volunteerism, or whatever they call it. What's the word they call it?
Voluntourism.
Volunteerism is just a word. That's pretty normal. But when you add volunteer to it, it kind of takes it to the next level. But yeah, if you're interested in looking into that, we will put a couple links in the show notes for you to check that out. This episode is, I think it's challenging for the three of us, because we've been a part of the problem in the past, and it's good for us to slow down and think critically about motive and why we do the things that we do, and does it best serve the people we're trying to serve? And the answer may be no, it may not, and there may be a better way to do it.
And I guess one of the big issues with it for me is not that it's necessarily in and of itself terrible. Like, you're not harming the people that are there necessarily, but it gives us a false sense of what it looks like to help, what it looks like to love hurting people around the world, all of that sort of thing. It skews our view of that. It skews our view of what our calling is as believers, if you're part of the Christian community, that sort of thing. Like it's just empty kind of thing. It's just eating candy in place of your meals, essentially. Like there's something really important and something that can give sustenance to you. And you're just, yeah, you are eating something, you're doing something, but it's just, that's not what it's supposed to be.
You gotta eat your broccoli, man.
Broccoli.
I love the empty shell perspective that you're bringing to the table. You're laughing because I was just like, I love empty shells. I'm an empty shell empty of a shell. Person, so I love that we're talking about this.
I hope it's left in. There was a long pause. I wasn't sure where this
empty
sentence was
going to
go.
Shells are all around me.
I just want y'all to know I love empty shells.
No, but when you think about the different things that we do to numb ourselves as people and also as Christians in order for us to go to sleep easier at night, whether or not it's volunteering for a couple of days once a year so that we feel comfortable about who we are as Christians, that is an easy fix. That is M&Ms. You're totally spot on with that. James and I worked with a homeless ministry for a while here in Hattiesburg, and it was a long-term commitment, and it sucked. It was very difficult. Like there were high highs at different points, but there were a lot of lows. It was almost obnoxious at times when you would look down at your phone and you're like, oh my God, is that guy calling me again? What does he need? There was a long-term need that was met by a group of volunteers, but it pulled you down, right? Like it wore on you over the long term.
It would have been a lot easier to go to Haiti.
It would have been so much easier to go to Haiti, right? We were eating Brussels sprouts. Like this was not a Kit Kat, man. Like this is not the candy that you wanted. I'm going to go with this metaphor. Let's just keep it up. But
we were eating a T-bone.
We were eating
a T-bone.
Which is
fitting because there was a guy there named T-bone.
There was. But there was joy in what we were doing, but there was also pain. It was obnoxious at times. It was definitely kept you from doing what you wanted to do in your life at all times. And when that challenge is a part of what you're doing as a volunteer or as someone who's serving other people, that may be a good sign that you're on the right path. I think, as James said, like we are committed to a long-term relationship with the least of these, and it's very easy just to ignore that.
Yeah, and when you have the things that you feel like cover you in those small things, it's like we all know those people who say something, and you're like, that was really racist. I'm like, no, I have a black friend.
Right.
Like, okay, well, that doesn't mean that you're not racist, that you have a black friend. Doing that one thing to cover you for anything else you want to do is kind of what I feel these short-term trips end up being for people. Is no, I'm not all about me. I look what I did. I went and did this, so I don't have to, help that person who has two kids and is a single mom, and so her power was shut off.
Right.
Or I don't have to help the lady down the street who can't take care of herself, and so there's trash all over her house and her yard because she can't deal with it. Well, I don't have to do that because you don't understand. I flew to Africa. I raised the money and flew there and painted an orphanage. Like, neat.
It was a beautiful shade of blue.
Right.
Well, guys, we want to thank you for listening. We want to thank you for bearing with us as we, jump through topics. Sometimes our topics are messy. I'm not saying this one was. I'm just saying that.
Well, a little bit.
It was. But we appreciate you sticking with us and coming back and listening more, maybe even sharing it with your friends. If you want to if you want to learn more about us or just see other content that we've created, you can go to everythingisokay.net. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. And you can find us there. We haven't posted a new blog in a while, but there is blog content. There's some pictures of us, all that stuff. So,
I mean, and heck, we may even have a new picture pretty soon of James and I.
Double denim
in it up. That was hard to say. Double denim-ing.
You're saying we need to do a double denim.
Double denim.
Buddy photo shoot.
Yeah,
Brad,
absolutely.
When are you gonna
and
be
we'll
in
put
town?
It up.
I don't know. Hopefully soon.
Because, you know, we could probably throw that kid seat on the tandem bike.
Heck yeah, we could. Get the three of us, dude. Just in denim.
Oh my goodness.
We were wondering what it was going
to
take.
We seriously need to have a double denim, three of us doing something really dumb picture.
You know, Brad spends hours at night just thinking about what's going to take this podcast to the next level. Why do we only have X amount of listeners? Double denim times three? That's your answer, Brad. Go to sleep, man. Get some shut eye. Just nailed it.
Nice. Nice. All right. With that, I'm going to go ahead and end this episode. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Mex.
I'm James Eisenhower.
And I think everything's okay, people.
Nailed it.
Donnie's in the kitchen, working on the juke, while the 90s kids are singing, nothing compares to you. Nobody knew. Nobody knew that Lucy's in the basement trying to cut the Jones, making that face she gets when she's feeling ignored. Nobody knew. Nobody knew. She don't sleep on Saturday night, staring down a flame trying to feel alright. Hard to keep it steady when you're walking on the ride, blinded by the blue light. She doesn't flip a switch, cause all the light she needs is flicking from her wrist. It's slowing down and breathing. Nobody knew. Nobody knew. Voices from up above soften to a hush as we notice that she's gone, but she don't notice us. That's when we knew. That's when we knew. She don't sleep on Saturday night, staring down a flame trying to feel alright. Hard to keep it steady when you're walking on the wire, blinded by the blue light. When she's slightly amused, she wouldn't come to. She wouldn't come to. She don't sleep on Saturday night, staring down the flame, trying to feel alright. Hard to keep it steady.